So, Megan, if you were coming down to the ground for the first time after living in space for your whole life, what would you most be excited about to experience on the Earth?
So, like, there's so much, right? I had to think about this for a minute. And my first instinct was to say, like, water, like swimming. But, like, I don't think you would even have any concept of what that would be like. So, and there's like water in space. You need water to live. So, I'm gonna say, like, any animal, because it would be like, they would feel like mythic creatures, right? It would be like meeting a dog, would be like meeting a dragon. Like, you've only ever heard of them. You've never seen one in real life. Like, you've never seen another living thing that's not like a human being or that weird religious tree that they had. So, like, I think I'd be most pumped for like literally any animal ever.
See, okay, so first of all, you stole mine because I was gonna say swimming because like in the opening in Clark's opening monologue in the pilot episode, she talks about like she's never been on the ground, all the things she's never done, and she specifically says, I've never floated in water. And it's like, damn, floating in water is so great.
Right?
Like,
It's choice.
it's so awesome. I mean, I guess if you were like a lucky person who got to, go in zero G, like go outside and work on the outside of the ark, like you'd be able to float. So, like, that probably is even cooler than floating in water. But for all the normal people who don't get to go out in spacesuits, like floating in water would be so cool.
Would be. I do love water.
But also, you make an excellent point that, like, they didn't have animals on the ark. So, like, they would have had maybe pictures or ideas of what animals looked like back on Earth, but like they probably would have expected, not to know everything about animals. So like in that first episode, when they see that two-headed deer, maybe they were just like, how did they know that that was not normal, right? Like, how are they not like, maybe this is just what deer look like?
It would have been hilarious if like that happened and there would have been like that musical cue that's like, oh, horror, and they were just like, wow, a deer.
Wow,
Like,
an animal. I have no
magical.
concept of what this is supposed to look like.
Oh man, that's a good one.
Like, if they had just seen, instead of all those bioluminescent butterflies, just normal butterflies, they still would have been like, holy shit, this is crazy.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I bet like after that, every bug that didn't glow was like a huge disappointment. Like,
Yeah,
what? You mean this
seriously.
thing doesn't even light up? What's it even for? Oh man.
Welcome to A Bit Much. My name is Jenna.
I'm Megan, and on A Bit Much, every 3 weeks or whatever we feel like it slash aren't super duper busy, we watch a few episodes of The 100. We read a few chapters from the book it's based off of, and then we get together and we talk about
That is an accurate representation of what happens on this show. Thank you, Megan. So, it's time to summarize.
Okay, everyone's favorite part. Okay, so I have the first two episodes, so I'm just gonna get into it. Episode one, season two. Clark discovers that she and 47 others from the 100 are in Mount Weather, a swanky underground facility housing survivors from Earth to which the outside air is toxic. They are seemingly welcomed with open arms, but Clark remains suspicious, even trying to escape before Jasper convinces her not to, because opening the door would harm Mount Weather's citizens. Finn, Bellamy, Raven, and Murphy are picked up by Kane and Abby and brought to Camp Jaha, where the rest of the Arcadians landed. Raven is still very wounded. Lincoln brings Octavia to his home village in order to find an antidote for her poisoned wound, despite her protest that he will be caught as a traitor and executed. Summary for episode two, season two. Abby performs surgery on Raven to remove the bullet lodged in her spine, leaving her alive but crippled, unable to feel most of her left leg. Finn, Bellamy, and others from the 100 form a search party to find the missing 100 kids when Kane refuses to due to Grounder retaliation. Octavia bargains with Lincoln's clan for his life before they're attacked by Reapers. Clark, still suspicious of Mount Weather, inquires about a supposed Grounder attack until her investigation leads her to discover a secret prison where they keep Grounders and use their blood to heal their citizens of radiation poisoning. Through a series of hallucinations of his son Wells, Jaha retrofits a missile to take him to the ground and lands in an unknown location.
Nice. Season 2, episode 3. Actually, first I want to say, in our last episode, you were like, I apologize in advance for how bad my summaries are. And I also want to do that because this one that I'm about to do, I haven't even written out in full sentences. So there's going to be like a little bit of ad-libbing
here. I love it. Bring it on.
Season 2, episode 3. Kane tries to maintain control at Camp Jaha, but eventually decides to go on a diplomatic mission and leaves Abby in charge. Finn is ruthless in his attempts to find Clark, torturing a Grounder for information and eventually killing him to prevent him from stopping them from finding the rest of the 100. Octavia fights the Reapers with Lincoln's clan and recovers for some of their people, but does not find Lincoln among them. Clark and Anya escape from Mount Weather, running from the Mountain Men and the Reapers who try to capture them, but eventually escaping, but then Anya takes Clark captive at the end of the episode. And we see the Mountain Men and the Reapers working together in some ways, and ultimately see the doctor from Mount Weather has captured Lincoln and says to put him in something called the Cerebus program.
Yeah.
Season 2, episode 4. Jaha is taken in by a family who is traveling to the City of Light, but when they ultimately sell him out for their own safety, he isn't mad about it. Bellamy, Finn, Murphy, Monroe, and Sterling discover a crashed ARC station and stop to save a survivor, losing Sterling in the process. Octavia finds them and the group splits up, Finn and Murphy going to search for their friends and everyone else returning to Camp Jaha. Clark and Anya struggle for power over one another, but when they reach Camp Jaha, they understand they must work together to defeat the Mountain Men. Unfortunately, guards shoot and kill Anya before they reach the camp.
Boom. That's what happened.
Boom. So, where to begin? Let me get my head for the first one. So, we ended last season on this wild cliffhanger.
Right.
And then we begin. I love, like, the first, I guess, probably before the opening credits, like, the first, you know, 5 minutes or whatever of this season, where, like, we're once again in that sterile white medical room with Clark, and she's just, like, doesn't know what to do, is completely confused, and then when she sees that Monty is no longer in his room across the hall from her, she freaks out and she, like, just again goes totally I don't want to use the word like feral, but you know, just goes into intense survivor mode, like pulls a like bar off of the wall and like knocks out the camera that's watching her, knocks out the window in the door, cuts herself by like through opening, and then like picks up a piece of broken glass so that she can like accost the person who is cleaning Monty's room, holds this girl hostage as she like takes her to, you know, wherever she's like, you know, where's Monty, what did you do with him, where are my friends, holds her hostage with this, you know, shank made out of a broken glass, and then like, you know, so again, we've like transitioned from this like stark white room to again, like Clark is covered in blood. She's like holding someone hostage. And then again, the contrast of like the girl, you know, leads Clark to this dining room where again, like you called it swanky. And it is, it's like everyone's wearing these like fancy clothes. There's tablecloths. They're eating off of like china, like this huge room full of people eating. And again, just like the visual shock of that compared to everything we've seen so far. And then like the panic that sets in when they see Clark.
Yes, no, it's very good. And it's like you, it's just such a great contrast to like, you know, the Clark that we met see the beginning of season one, where she's like, you know, she takes charge, but she's like, we need to help everyone. We need to get like food. We need to, you know, create a camp. Yeah. And she's like in charge, but she's like very diplomatic about it. And then she was like, I will shank a bitch. Like, yeah. I don't even care who you are, what you're doing. Like, I will use you to survive at any cost. And that's just really, yes. it's very sad because it's like, she's so quick to violence, but it's like, how can you not be after?
Exactly. Yeah. If you're in that situation where you're trapped, right, as far as you know, you're a prisoner, you're captured, and your only like friend that you know was still alive has disappeared.
Yes.
Like, yeah, of course that's how she's gonna react, you know, especially after what she's just experienced, you know, over the past, I don't even know what the timeline is here, like couple like months that they were on the ground, a couple weeks, who knows?
It's really hard to say.
So yeah, that was great. We get our first kind of glimpse at what Mount Weather society is like there. And then we go back to the woods.
To the woods.
But we get to see that Bellamy and Finn are alive, which at the end of last season we weren't sure about.
Yeah, which they like kind of explained by like we used the tunnels or whatever, but I'm also like, all right, that seems like a little bit of a cop out because like you were right there right before they set those rockets off or whatever.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, but it's, I think Bellamy does have a line where he's like, we knew the fire was coming, which is like fair. Like that is as soon as they saw the dropship door closing, they're probably like, oh shit, like we are booking it away from here as fast as possible.
True. Yeah, so it's like, Finn has been captured with some other rando who is just there to be killed by some grounder. I think they're going to take him back to the commander or something. And then
yeah.
Bellamy and two semi-randos. What are their names? Monroe and Sterling?
Monroe and Sterling.
They stumble upon Finn and they, like, rescue him. And that's good. And then they go try to find everyone else. They go back to the dropship where they find Raven and Murphy. And which is funny because it's like Raven for sure. I added another notch to Murphy cheats death count because Raven for sure tried to shoot him, but her gun.
Yeah, but she was out of bullets.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah, actually, can we just like sidebar to talk about this episode and Raven and Murphy?
Yes, please.
So Raven is still in the dropship because I guess like she just never walked out like everyone else and didn't get captured by the mountain men. So she's just been like lying in there slowly dying for like a couple days or whatever.
Yeah. Which, you know, it's not traumatic at all.
Right. And then a grounder comes and finds her and she shoots him. And then Murphy comes in immediately after the grounder and Raven tries to shoot him too, but is out of bullets, which is, yes, you're right. Murphy has cheated death again. But then they have this conversation while they're just like sitting in the dropship together, both not very well off, like expecting to die pretty much. And we're basically, Raven is like, so what's your, like, tragic backstory? Like, how did you become a murdering psychopath? And so Murphy tells his tragic backstory, which is that when he was a kid, he got sick. His father stole some medicine to try and save him, which I don't know why stealing medicine was necessary. Like, I don't know why the, like, medical station wouldn't just treat Murphy, but regardless, anyway, so his dad steals some medicine, gets caught for it, gets floated, and then, like, after that, his mother becomes an alcoholic, which eventually kills her, and she blames Murphy for his father's death. So, like, yeah, very sad story, clearly, real rough childhood. Some similarities with Raven's own childhood in terms of the alcoholic mother.
Mm-hmm.
But then after he tells that whole story, Raven is like, boo-hoo. And it's like, I literally in my head thought of the Jake Peralta line from Brooklyn Nine-Nine where he goes like, cool story, still murder. Like yeah, that's still great that you have this tragic backstory. Doesn't excuse the stuff you've done.
Yeah, still killed a whole bunch of people. So, yeah. Like, yeah. Listen, sometimes moms are alcoholics. That doesn't give us free license to just do whatever we want.
Yeah. But then, again, he's like, he's kind of being nice to Raven, right? Like, when she's, like, starts coughing up blood, because that's got to happen at least once per episode. Someone's got to cough up some blood. You know, he's like, you know, hey, get on your side. Like, trying to help her out, you know? And, like, Murphy is just a fascinating character. Like, I feel like you could do a whole just watch of the 100, like, just analyzing every single one of Murphy's decisions and, like, what he is thinking in each situation,
right? Like, part of me wants to think that he's like true neutral, where he is like just trying to survive at all costs, and like sometimes he feels like being good, so he's good sometimes, and other times he's like, fuck it, I'm gonna be evil, and he just does whatever he wants.
Exactly.
It really is he's one of the most fascinating characters I've ever seen.
Yeah, I agree. So yeah, I guess that's, oh no, they get found at the end of that episode, right?
Yeah, by is it Abby and Kane? Yeah, because they were in the same part of the arc that fell. So, yeah, Abby and Kane are kind of rounding up everyone on their way to the main part of the arc, Camp Jaha. And it's just, it's so funny because as soon as, so it's like they find the Finn, Bellamy, and the randos first. And so they pick them up. And then when like Bellamy and Finn see Murphy with Raven, like Bellamy goes and attacks Murphy. Well, okay, wait, like Murphy, what?
First, Abby goes into the dropship and finds Raven and Murphy. And she asks Raven what happened because she's clearly very injured. And Raven just says, I got shot.
Right.
She doesn't rat Murphy out. She doesn't say Murphy shot me. She just says, I got shot. So that's, again, like this interesting, like, she's deciding for whatever reason in that moment that she doesn't want to blame Murphy for this. She doesn't want him to get in trouble. But then they come out of the dropship and Bellamy didn't see Murphy, and Bellamy immediately starts punching him.
Which is peak Bellamy, obviously. I love it.
Yeah.
But so that happens. And then like Kane, like, six the guards on them. They're like, pull these guys apart. They're like, put them in containment. He was like, you know, that's not just you now. Huh?
Yeah, he straight up is like, arrest Bellamy. And I'm like, you can't arrest people. There's no laws on the ground.
Right, and then it's like, oh wait, no, they still believe in laws. Like they haven't been down here long enough to like understand that that's not how this works anymore. And it's just so jarring. Like, I love, like, even when Kane and Abby find Bellamy and Finn and the randos, they're like, everything's going to be okay. Like, we're here now. And I'm like, you don't know shit about shit, okay? Like, you are not going to protect anyone from anything. Like, it's just so funny for the adults to, like, swing in and be like, good job, kids. We got it from here. Or it's like, they obviously do not at all.
Yeah. Well, and it's so this is something that happens in the next episode, actually. But so, like, they say, like, arrest Bellamy. They bring him back to Camp Jaha and, you know, like, lock him up or whatever. And then Bellamy and Kane are talking, and Bellamy is like, you have to let me out so that I can go search for the rest of the 100. Mm-hmm. Like, those are my people out there. I need to go find them.
Yeah.
And Kane says, they're my people too. And, you know, so it's this like interesting negotiation of like, how do you define the like communities that exist, you know, of the people who have come down from space now? Because it's like, yeah, okay, ultimately you can say, well, we all came from the Ark, and that's what Kane is believing, right? He's like, we all came from the Ark, so we're all one community, and he at this point is Chancellor, so he's like, I'm responsible for all of them. But it's like, for the past however long it's been, which we're not sure about, Bellamy has been the leader, a leader of this group of, you know, juvenile delinquents that came down. And, like, they have been through all of these insane experiences that Kane and the rest of the people from the Ark have no idea what it's been like. So it's like, yeah, it's like they don't have this understanding that this whole, essentially this whole new society has formed among the 100 that they sent down that is separate from the rest of the Ark.
Yeah, and that's, like, a huge sticking point for, like, almost the rest of the show, where it's like,
yeah,
they just don't understand because it's like, right, it's two totally different things. Like, yeah, okay, you came down here like voluntarily, where you sent all of us to like maybe die. So yeah. How about fuck you real quick and then we'll do whatever we want. So exactly. Like, oh yeah. But it's just so good. Like, it's just such an extreme example of like the whole societal phenomenon of like, okay, a kid turns 18 and now you're an adult, now go live on your own, now just know how to do everything perfectly, but then like you still treat them like a child. It's like that weird, you know what I'm talking about, like that weird tension where it's like kids almost becoming adults, and but it feels like that, but like to the nth degree, because it's like, oh yeah, we sent you down here to survive on your own, but now, oh no, we're gonna come and make all the rules again. So
yeah, exactly.
Oh, I just love it.
So we also see in this episode, like you said, Lincoln and Octavia go back to Lincoln's village so that he can get an antidote. So we discover in this episode that Lincoln's village is near the ancient ruins of the Lincoln Memorial, which I remember the first time that I watched this show. Until we saw that, I had not, like, in my head, I had not made the connection whatsoever. Like, when I heard Lincoln's name, I did not think that it was spelled that way. Like, I didn't think it was, like, the same thing until we see the Lincoln Memorial. And I'm like, oh, I get it.
like, good old Honest Abe.
Like, it's, we're in Washington, D.C. Oh, I get it now.
Oh, yeah, that guy. yeah. I mean, not much happens with them. Yeah. She's just, you know, she's injured, poisoned. He's concerned. He's going to sacrifice himself for her because they just, like, trade places, sacrificing themselves for each other.
That's this whole show.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of all we see in this episode. And then we also have Clark in Mount Weather, where I thought it was interesting that we see that, like, at first, after they've, like, recaptured her after she held Maya, the girl, hostage, they're, like, kind of asking her questions or trying to explain things to her, and she's just not responding at all, which I thought was, you know, an interesting repetition of, like, what we saw Lincoln do mm-hmm. when he was first captured by the Hundred, right? Mm-hmm. If it's, like, as a prisoner, he just stayed quiet, didn't give anything about himself away, just listened to what they had to say. And that's what Clark does at first, until basically there is a hint that, you know, the rest of her people are there. And then she, you know, is kind of willing to sort of play along in order to see what's going on, but like you said, is suspicious from the start and never stops being suspicious.
Right? And it's like, it's so interesting because, like, as the audience, like, even, you know, not having seen it before, you're like, okay, yeah, Clark is for sure right. There is something very fishy going on. Like, you just know.
Yeah.
Because it can't, if it was a perfect, great society, then, like, that's the end of the show, right? They just all live in the weather for the rest of the world. So, like, you know that something is up. But I'm, like, so curious, like, if she ever got to a society that, like, actually was secure and everything, like, would she be able to relax? Like, I don't think so. I think she would still just be this paranoid forever. About everything, which is very sad.
Which, like, it's sad, but it's kind of fair. Like, after what she's gone through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And as an audience member, it's so frustrating for, like, to see the others. They're just like, relax, we're safe. And it's like, you're not safe. You're so not safe. Like, please get out of there. Oh, it's like when a horror movie, when they're like, let's just go into this creepy cabin. It's like, why would you go into the creepy cabin? Run away.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, like, you know, over the next couple episodes, that's, you know, Jasper particularly comes sort of like the figurehead of this, like, hope or optimism that, like, we're safe now, we're getting fed, we have nice clothes, like, we're not under attack by the grounders, like, let's just be thankful for what we have, let's be appreciative, and let's, like, you know, embrace this. Whereas Clark is the one who is, like, again, can't accept that at its face value, is like, no, there's something wrong going on here, they're not telling us everything. And yeah, it's like, you're right that Clark is right, but you know, the, like, other people there are just like so hopeful that like maybe they're even just like deluding themselves a little bit, right? They're like turning a blind eye to like the valid points that Clark has, but like they just so want to be safe that they're like willing to not look too deeply into what's going on.
Yeah. And I mean, I get that too, where I would be like, I'm fucking tired. Like, can I just eat some cake and wear this right. nice sweater? Like, leave me alone.
Yeah.
I think that's about everything.
Yes. The only other thing I would want to mention from this episode is just a nitpicking thing, which is that at a certain point, Lincoln says he's teaching Octavia some of the grounder language, the Trigetta slang. And she's like, but you guys speak English. And Lincoln says, only our warriors speak English. Which I think is disproved, like, within the next episode.
So. Yeah, where, like, the healer guy also speaks English. It's like, okay.
And also, I'm like, I'm pretty sure almost every grounder that we encounter at some point speaks English. So, like...
Yeah. So, it's also, like...
I don't know why they put that line in there.
Yeah. I mean, their language system... I mean, like, you as a linguistics person, I'm sure could pick it apart more than I can. But, like, it feels very strange for them to have developed a new language in this amount of time.
You're right that... I think even like when they, I think I read somewhere that like when they hired the guy to create Trigetta slang, which is also, he's the same linguist who's created conlangs for other TV shows. Like he created Dothraki and maybe like High Valyrian for what? Game of Thrones. And yeah, that he was like, okay, well in 97 years, a completely new language wouldn't develop. But I feel like they kind of like made up some sort of bullshit historical reasons that would happen. And it is, I mean, it is a clearly very, like, if you listen to it, you can tell it's very much, you know, related to English. Like a lot of the words that they use are, you know, cognates or related somehow to English. So, but yeah, you're right. They wouldn't need a whole new language by then.
Yeah. And I feel like in the newest season, they have like a throwaway line where it's like, they say something about like a different society is like, it sounds like Creole, like that kind of like an offshoot of English or whatever, which I'm like, well, okay, right. whatever. It does sound cool. That's fine.
Yeah. Okay. Next episode.
Yep. So this is where Jaha goes actually insane.
Well, so at the end of the last season, the last thing that happened that we saw with Jaha was that he was like up in the ark, like ready to die, and then he heard a baby cry, and that's like where we cut.
Yeah.
So then now we revisit him, and he's looking for a baby, and he finds one.
Oh, I just really wish they would have just let Jaha die a hero up in space.
Yeah, I mean. Right, that's like how many things would not have gone wrong later if Jaha had just died now.
Oh, because he's just, I find him very annoying as a character, because he's like so self-righteous, and then like, I just find him so annoying. Like, even in like the parts where he's like a good guy, where he's like, I'm not going to be mad at you for trading me to the slavers, I'm like, be mad, like that's a reason to be mad at someone, like God, you're so ready to die, it's just so annoying, like have some sort of survival instinct, please.
Okay, but here's the thing, because he finds a baby and then he's like, well, I have this baby now and I can't let this baby die, so I'm gonna find a way to go down to the ground, which he does, and I'm like, if there's all these fucking ways that you that you people have found to go down to the ground, why whatever. And then, like, by the end of the episode, it becomes clear that he's been hallucinating the baby the whole time. And then that turns into a hallucination of Wells. And it's like, oh, Wells was the baby. And then, like, his hallucination of Wells is, like, telling him, your people still need you. You need to go down. Your time isn't over. Whatever. And so I'm just, like, kind of fascinated by this because it's like, well, it's all Jaha's self... all Jaha's subconscious telling him that.
Exactly.
And so, like, how much of this does he actually believe? Because, again, it's like there's this weird tension of, like, He is so ready to die. Like, he's so ready to sacrifice himself. But then when he actually has the chance to die, his, like, subconscious is telling him, wait, actually, your people still need you? Like, how much of what fake Wells is telling him does he actually believe? And how much of that is, like, some sort of weird survival instinct, right? Like, I can't totally figure out how to interpret that conversation that he has with his imagined Wells.
Well, I'll help you because I don't like Jaha. So my interpretation of it is that he does believe it actually secretly because he's a self-important coward who doesn't want to die and also thinks that he's the only one that can save his people. So he's like, I guess I'll do this crazy plan, which... So I was like, all right, cool, whatever. Fix a missile, go down to the Earth, fine. But, like, the moment that my suspension of disbelief was shattered was when he just flung himself into space, hoping that he would be in the right trajectory to get to the other airlock. I'm like, okay, yeah. No, that would never work. Like, that never, that ever, was ever like, work.
You know, that reminded me of in the Martian movie when they saved Mark Watney with, like... just like both of them just like launching into zero gravity space, like, hope we can catch each other, and then they do.
Yeah, so that was the moment where it lost me. Maybe Jaha's just really been dead the entire time. Maybe he's a hallucination for everyone else, because that would never work. So yeah, that's Jaha. He's just losing his mind, thinking he needs to get down to the Earth. He makes it. He's in the desert, which is cool because, we haven't seen the desert. So we're like, oh, I wonder where he is.
Yes, which I was like, I'm curious where this desert is supposed to be geographically. And maybe at this point I should just let go of, like, realism in terms of that. But, like, right, because we know that, like, Lincoln's Village is Washington, D.C. And also later in this season we discover more, you know, stuff. The ground or city is, you know, built like where Washington, D.C. used to be. And then we know that, like, Lincoln has friends on the ocean. So it's like, okay, well, that's the Atlantic coast to the east. But I'm like, where is this desert?
I mean, so the only cop out I would give it is, like, do call it the dead zone. So I wonder if, like, you know, if a missile went off right there, would it become, like, a nuclear wasteland? I don't know how that works.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, also because, like, the show takes place, like, 100 or 200 years in the future. The apocalypse that happened before the show started, it was in, like, 22-something. So it's like, okay, landscape, geography could have changed. There could be a new desert somewhere the eastern United States.
Climate change. Whack.
Anyway.
Oh, one more thing Jaha before we move on. So in, like, Wells, the hallucination of Wells, like, pep talk to him to be like, no, Dad, you have to live. He says the phrase, your life can be more than impossible decisions and a tragic end. And I was like, yigs, that's not true. That's exactly what he's like,
That's still what it's going to be once you get to Earth.
Every person who's ever died on this show's life has been. So sorry, but that's not true at all.
Yeah. Whew. So we get another really intense surgery scene.
Which are your favorite. I know that for sure.
But basically Raven, like, decides to have surgery, even though it might kill her, because if she doesn't have it, she'll for sure be paralyzed. And then she has it, and she's a little bit paralyzed on, like, the bottom of her left leg, and she's, like, still super mad about that. And Finn is just there being a supportive friend, which is maybe the last time we see him as, like, a compassionate human being. But we can talk about that more later.
This is the last episode where Finn is actually Finn, so just, you know, kiss that goodbye. But, you know, Raven's being Raven. She's like, cool, thanks for holding my hand or whatever, but, like, go find our friends. He's like, yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Which then, so, again, Kane is trying to keep control, but then Abby and Miller's dad, you know, give the kids guns and are like, go find them, good luck.
Oh, she cracks me up.
Yeah. So last episode, Murphy and Raven were stuck together in the dropship and like had some deep conversation. And then this episode, Murphy and Bellamy are trapped together because they're both locked up by Kane. And again, they have this sort of conversation where basically Bellamy is like, you know, fuck you, Murphy, you're the worst. And he calls him a traitor, right? And he says, like, you know, I would have never betrayed our people to the grounders like you did. You gave them information. You told them where we were, whatever. And then Murphy is basically like, hey, I was tortured for 3 days. Like, you can sit there and say that you're better me or whatever, but, like, you haven't experienced that. You don't know whether you would break under those circumstances. So, again, I thought that was, like, a good, interesting conversation that was, like, again, made you understand more about, like, Murphy and about, like, people's, you know, again, like, Bellamy's belief that just, like, Murphy's the scum of the earth when it's like, well, you know, you haven't been through what he's been through. Yeah. Admittedly, still shouldn't have murdered those people.
No, yeah, I agree. Also, good points all around. Torture is bad.
Yes.
Oh, man. So, this is also the episode where I can remember her name for a minute. Octavia makes, like, first contact or whatever with Lincoln's people. She wakes up mm-hmm. and his friend, I think Nico might be his name?
Nico.
Is healing her in a very aggressive way. He doesn't really want to be helping her, but he is good friends with Lincoln and he promised that he would keep her alive. So, healing her, and she's like, we need to save Lincoln. And he was like, he kind of betrayed all of us, so he's got what's coming to him. And she was like, no, you're going to help me by being my hostage. And she takes him.
Yep.
And this is where we meet Indra for the first time. Fucking love
it
Indra.
It is. We meet Indra. Yeah.
But so she pretty much just goes up and is like, I know he's your only healer, because he literally told me that for no reason. I know he's your only healer. I will kill him if you don't give me Lincoln at this place before dark. And Indra's like, cool, whatever. And she leaves with Nico. And then she lays in wait, and they do it. She gets it. She gets Lincoln back. He's hurt. She's like, what'd you do to him? And Indra's like, he's supposed to be dead. How about you show some goddamn gratitude? She's like, fine, whatever. And they make the change or whatever. And then the Reapers attack. Oh, no. And I don't know if we see them take Lincoln.
I think we do. Yeah, we do. Okay. But what I was confused about is that the Reapers only took Lincoln and Nico.
True. Why did they?
Like, why were Indra and Octavia not also kidnapped?
That's a very good question. I do not know.
Yeah, I think it's just a plot hole because based on what we discover about the Reapers later, like, I don't see why they would have left people behind. But whatever. Yeah, so then at the end of this episode, Clark does some more snooping around and discovers the secret prison for... So, I mean, we've already seen in Mount Weather that the citizens get dialysis in order to heal radiation sickness. And then... Clark discovers that this dialysis is coming, the new blood that is healing them is coming directly from the bodies of grounders who are captured, put in cages, and then hung upside down and, you know, stuck needles into them so they can give their blood to the Mount Weather people until they are too out of blood to live anymore.
Really fucking horrifying. Like, yes. Terrible. And another twist on a twist, is she finds Anya in mm-hmm. the cage. And she's like, oh my god, Anya, I know you. I have to save you. So, and I mean, that's where we open the next episode, obviously. Because
right,
what
like,
else are you going
to
do?
Right into to episode 3, where where immediately Clark sees Anya and then starts trying to save her, which is like...
Interesting.
Again, one of the great parts of this show is like the constantly shifting... alliances, which is just just necessary.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, like Clark sees Anya in this cage, clearly, you know, there to be her blood to be taken. And it's like, well, we were enemies last time I saw you, but now I realize that we have a larger common enemy, which is the people stealing your blood and capturing my people. So I guess we're working together now.
Right. It's like, at least you will tell me you want to kill me to my face.
Yeah.
Oh man. So yeah, so they, I mean, it's relatively simple for them to escape ish.
Right. It's just like once, yeah, like because Clark just breaks the lock and then they can just go outside because there's just a door, which like to any of the people from Mount Weather, that's a huge obstacle because they can't go outside or they'll get killed by radiation, but not Clark and Anya. Because so I guess maybe we should explain this part of this important part of the plot is that these people who've been living in Mount Weather are alive. They've survived since the nuclear apocalypse, but they can't go outside because of the radiation. But the grounders basically have evolved through, you know, natural selection of just people who could stand more radiation to be able to survive the level of radiation that exists just on the Earth now. And the people from space have been subject to solar radiation their whole lives, so they've also sort of evolved to be resistant to it. So they can all go outside fine, but the people in Mount Weather, if they ever go outside, get super sick and die from radiation poisoning.
Yes, very good aside. That's a very important plot point. So yeah, so they kind of it looks like they're dropped through a trapdoor, and it's like for a minute you're like, why is there a trapdoor there? But it's really just like a trash chute basically for like used up grounder bodies, which is awful. Mm-hmm. And they land in like a heap of dead people, and it's so terrible. Or like
almost dead, right? People.
Yeah, because like you hear some moaning and like they're for sure like on their way out, and it's really freaking terrible. And they like climb out of this bin and they hear Reapers coming, so they have to like pretend to be like captured bodies to be taken to get their blood sucked away until they're dead. So they are pushed in this cart for a while. I kind of lost the thread of that for a minute.
Yeah, so basically like okay. So we kind of are discovering that there is some kind of situation worked out together between the Reapers and the Mountain Men, yes. Right? And so it seems like the Reapers, we kind of piecing this together over this episode and the next episode, that like the Reapers seem to capture people, capture other grounders, bring them to Mount Weather, where they are then used for their blood. And then once they are like pretty much blood dry, they are given back to the Reapers, who eat them? Maybe? Sure about that step in the process yet. So yeah, so when I was watching this episode, I was watching it with my sister, and we were talking about how like she was suggesting like, well, why do this where you just like take grounders, use all of their blood really quickly until they're like not useful anymore, and then get rid of them and then have to get new grounders, instead of just capturing like a bunch of people and then just like keeping them well fed, only taking enough blood that then they can regenerate their own blood.
Yeah.
Doesn't that seem more sustainable? But then I was saying like, well, maybe first of all, if you're not just like throwing them in cages and then bleeding them dry, they'll be healthier, stronger, more likely to fight back. And maybe it would be harder to hide from the population.
But like,
if you did that,
who knows? I can't remember from my first viewing. I can't remember who knows what's up, you know, like who's in the know.
Yeah.
Cause like,
I also don't totally remember.
Yeah. So. Because like they have to, at some point they have to be like, where's this blood coming from? Like,
yeah.
Just in the wall. So like, I feel like they've got to know, like everyone's got to know what's up. I don't think it's to keep it secret. And I would assume like resources are also like important to keep like just to their civilization and.
Yeah, so having to feed captured grounders would, yeah.
And it seems like they only need to do it really when they're exposed to radiation, right?
I think so, yeah. But again, we'll have to watch more episodes to find out.
Yeah, but so it's very funny though, because Clark is trying to be like, let's work together, and Anya just keeps trying to like run away from her. Like, I'm gonna do me, you do you. I'm not responsible for you or your people. She's like, I don't want to leave my people in there. She was like, okay, yes, but we can like leave and come back with more people and get them all out of there. And so you think that Anya has like abandoned her. She just like runs in the opposite direction, and you don't see her for a while. And Clark is captured by the Mountain Men. They find her through the Reapers. The Reapers corner her, and the Mountain Men, like, use this crazy tone machine. It's a very high-pitched tone to, like, control the Reapers, basically, and make them stop. Mm-hmm. It's your first kind of hint that, like, maybe this is less than voluntary, this symbiotic relationship with Reapers and Mountain Men. And so they take her, and they're going to take her back to Mount Weather, and then Anya shows up and knocks them out, and they take their masks off. And they're like, ah, radiation, and then they flee.
And then they escape by jumping off a waterfall that is definitely not survivable.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure. But, you know, whatever. That's more believable than launching yourself into space, so I'll take it.
Fair, yeah. Let's see what else to talk about. So back at Camp Jaha, Kane finds out that Abby helped Bellamy and Finn and Murphy escape and also gave them guns. And he's very mad about this, and he's like, you always do whatever you want without thinking about the consequences. And the thing is that Kane is right, that Abby does do whatever she wants without thinking about the consequences. Unfortunately, it just normally works out for her. I guess except for the one time that her husband was killed. But, like, other than that.
Right, which, like, it didn't stop her from doing whatever the hell she wants.
Exactly, yeah. So it's like, you're right, Kane. It is really annoying. She's just usually right. So then anyway, in order to try and keep control, he authorized her to be lashed, which just technically is just like tased, basically, publicly, which is not great.
It looks very painful.
Yeah. But then, like, as things continue and he still, like, can't sort of keep control of things, he's like, actually, I'm gonna go try diplomacy with the Grounders, which is a great plan.
Yeah,
love that. And then he's like, and Abby, you're in charge now, you're the Chancellor. And okay.
It's just because we don't have any other named character that has that authority, maybe, but
Or it's like it seemed like he was like, I'm gonna go try diplomacy, and like, I need someone I can trust to be in charge and to like make good decisions or whatever. And I'm like, first of all, you've just pointed out that she always does whatever she wants without thinking about the consequences. And second of all, like, it feels more like Kane is like, wow, this job is really hard, I'm gonna go try something else, can you please take over for me, because I hate being in charge.
Also, like, these people all just watched her publicly get lashed for breaking the law, and now she's gonna be like, all right, fuckers, I'm in charge. Like, what?
And also, like, okay, there was some legal precedent for the idea that Kane just became chancellor once they were on the ground, because he was, like, vice chancellor, and Jaha, you know, stayed behind, so supposedly died. So it makes sense that it's like, okay, well, power will just pass to him for now. But Abby is no longer a member of the council, so she doesn't have any, like, authority. And the chancellor is voted for. Like, they have, so it's like they're completely bypassing, you know, unless they have made new laws in their, like, Exodus charter, which they mention that, like, you know, the succession of power works differently now than it did on the Ark. Like, they should have an election. And I understand why you don't want that, right? That, like, that could introduce instability, which it will later in the series. But, like, yeah, but there's not even, like, a thought of, like, mentioning why they're just allowed to say Abby's the Chancellor now.
That is true.
So we gotta talk about Finn.
So this is the beginning of the end for Finn. It's so strange. Because there's no reason. Anyway, so what happens is,
I mean, there's a reason, but there's not enough of a
motivation.
Right. There's not enough of a justification and not enough of an escalation. Like, it just, it's just like this switch. Which, so they go off, they find the Grounder camp where Murphy was held prisoner. And while they're, like, scoping it out, Finn sees a Grounder who around his neck is wearing, like, a chain that has, he recognizes Clark's watch hanging off of it. And he's like, that watch belonged to Clark's father. Like, there's no way she would have given it up without a fight. Like, you know, either she's been killed by this Grounder or she was captured by them and he took her watch.
And, like,
and it's, like, the angriest you have ever seen Finn in this moment. Like, you've never seen him express this kind of emotion before.
Yes. he's like, that son of a bitch or whatever.
Yeah.
And so he's very angry. They go, their whole plan is to, like, they use Murphy as bait, which I think is hilarious. I love every time that happens. I think it's so funny. And they capture this one specific grounder and take him back and, like, question him, which is funny now because Bellamy's all anti-torture now.
Well, so, yeah, so, like, Finn, they're, like, trying to question him. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't take this off a girl. I just found it, whatever. And Finn is basically, like, maybe Murphy kind of suggests it, like, hey, this isn't getting us anywhere. Let's hit him. And Finn is, like, just gung-ho, like, yeah, starts to, you know, hurt him. And Bellamy, like, holds him back, and he says, like, don't do this. Trust me. There's some lines you can't uncross. So it's like, again, it's like Bellamy is all anti-torture now. But, you know, but he's saying basically from experience that, like, hey, look, I've been in this situation before where, you know, like, someone I loved was in danger, and so I went a little bit too intense while interrogating a grounder, and, like, and he regrets it. Like, that's, you know, a huge part of Bellamy's character is living with this guilt over the bad things that he has done. But Finn ignores him and just tortures the guy, and then and then at the end, they're, like, debating whether to kill the grounder, because if they leave him alive, maybe he'll send a message to his people, whatever. And they're, like, arguing over it, and then Finn just shoots the guy. No qualms. Like, no. And that's, like, that's too far. Like, yeah. That's, there's no justification for that in his character at this point.
Nope. So it's, like, right, so it's, like, from the point of view of the writers, like, this is what they're trying to sell us, is that Finn is so upset and so worried about Clark that he has just, like, discarded all of his morals. Like, just threw him right in the trash can. Like, doesn't matter anymore because Clark is in danger because he's, like, just that in love with her or something. And I hate it. I hate everything about it. It makes me so angry. And, like, there's just not enough. Like, maybe if he had been, like, tortured by the grounders, or if he saw somebody, I don't know, it's just, like, he was just such a pacifist before this moment that it's, like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, and again, if it's, like, if it's a thing that's, like, in the heat of a moment, that's one thing. If it's an emotional reaction, which I could almost kind of see the torture being, right? Yeah. That he's, like, I need answers now so that we can go find Clark now. But then once you have those answers, again, just, like, the last time, you know, Finn has killed one person so far. We saw him kill that Reaper in self-defense. Mm-hmm. And he was racked with guilt afterwards, even though it was obvious that if he had not acted, he would have been killed himself. Like, there, you know, as morally correct in killing another human being as you can be, he was. And so, you know, but he was still racked with guilt. And, like, the fact that we've gone from that to this now, just cold-blooded shooting him, executing a man. Like, yeah, there was not enough of an escalation to justify that.
Yeah, and it's just disappointing. Because, like, Finn is such a good character. And they just, like, this is, like, the first instance that I can remember of they've just totally changed the character's characteristics because of, like, plot reasons. And this is, like, a theme. Yeah. It happens over and over again. And it really breaks my heart every time. I hate it.
Yeah.
As good as, like, of a job that they did with Bellamy's, like, learning from his mistakes, they do just as bad of a job for Finn and his lack of motivations for, you know, killing a man in cold blood.
Yeah. So, then Octavia fights the Reapers in this episode, and she saves Indra during the fight. But then they don't find Lincoln, and then we see that he's been captured by the Mountain Men. The only other note I have about this episode was that there was this excellent point. So we haven't talked really about Maya yet, but so Maya is one of the Mountain people. She works in the, like, medical thing, whatever. And Jasper, like, has a crush on her.
And so that, again, everyone.
So that, except for Harper, because fuck her.
Fuck Harper. She's low-hanging fruit.
And I think Maya is kind of a big part of Jasper's, like, optimism for the mountain men, right? Yeah. He's like, well, Maya seems great, so I trust all of them. But anyway, so there's this scene in this episode where Jasper and Maya have been hanging out, and then Monty comes up to Jasper to be like, hey, have you seen Clark? I haven't seen her in a while, and I'm concerned. So, like, but Monty, like, walks up to them and it, like, you know, says hi to Jasper and then just turns to Maya and goes, hi. And it's, like, the coldest, like, most cutting, like, tone. And it was incredible.
That's because they're supposed to be boyfriends, and I hate it.
They're supposed to be in love. And also, like, yeah, Monty is like, you're, Jasper, this is clouding your decisions. Like,
but yeah. One moment I do love about that is when Monty is like, no, like, we should look for Clark or whatever. Like, Jasper is like, you know, it's Clark. Like, I'm sure she can handle it. She'll be fine. And it's just, it's so interesting because, like, I feel like all of the 100, like, collectively have put, like, Clark, Bellamy, Finn, probably, and probably Raven, like, on this, these pedestals where they're like the best of us, right? Where, like, they mm-hmm. can't, they can't do any wrong. Like, they have led us, they've, like, kept us alive. Like, I feel like they just look up to them so much that they can't even imagine, like, them being the ones having to be saved. Which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, or, like, he says, like, well, it's Clark. I'm sure whatever she's gotten into, she's fine. But it's like, yes, but Clark herself is the one who's the most likely to get into life or death situations. So, yeah. Like, you should still probably be concerned.
Exactly. All right, next episode.
Next episode, episode 4. We see Jaha in the desert. He meets a little deformed boy who's played by Finn Wolfhard of Stranger Things fame.
Whoa, what? I did not even know that.
Uh-huh. I didn't know it until, my sister pointed it out, and then I was like, oh yeah, that is him. But his face is all messed yeah. up, so it is harder to tell.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, and again, it's like everything is, well, let's see. Everything for Jaha is either about his people or about Wells. And this episode, it was about both. where he becomes close and, you know, understands this little family and this boy because they love their son and he can relate to loving your son. But then the parents, like, sell him out so that they can, like, get a horse to keep going to the City of Light where they want to go. And he's like, well, I understand that because you love your son. So I will sacrifice myself because that's all I'm good at doing.
Literally, though. And I love, like, that this whole experience for him is basically just a guilt trip because, like, these parents, like, separated from their clan instead of giving up their son because, like, they, like, tradition or whatever in Grounder culture is if you have a deformed child to, like, leave it out in the forest and let it die mm-hmm. so that it doesn't get passed on through, like, the bloodline or whatever because, like, it's due to radiation and all that. Like, they don't know that, but, you know. That's the thing. And they were like, no, fuck that. We're going to take our son and, like, leave and try to find the City of Light or whatever. And, you know, Jaha's hearing all this and he was like, yeah, I made a different decision. He's like, I really just sacrificed my son for my people.
Yeah.
And, like, the lady's very nice about it. She was like, your people must be really important to you. And he was like, yeah, but my son was too. He was like, shut up. Your dad's a dick, Wells.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because Jaha's just the fucking worst. I really don't dislike Jaha. I find him very
annoying. Yeah, I know. Then we also have, basically, Raven in this episode. We meet Wick again, which is
love
great.
My life.
And Raven is just, like, sad and bitter because half of one of her legs doesn't work. And Wick is just basically, like, giving her pep talks and trying to make her happier, and that's
because he's the best.
Yeah, that's kind of their whole plot. And then the Bellamy and co discover a crash site for another one of the ARC stations, and apparently there is one single person from the station who has survived, and she is literally hanging on to a branch on a cliff.
Which, like,
how'd she get there?
So, okay, yeah. So let's play the scenario out. How long ago did the ARC land? Like, weeks ago? At least a few days.
I don't think it was weeks. I don't think they've been down there that long, but it has been at least several days.
Okay, several days. Let's say it fell into this, like, crevasse or something, and there are a ton of dead bodies on the cliff upside, like topside. So I'm imagining very grotesquely bodies just like flung over this cliff, and somehow this chick, instead of being smashed against the cliffside, she just holds up to a branch for days on end until these yucks come over and are like, okay, now we need to save her so we can just, you know, slow our roll for a whole episode and then we can keep moving forward. Like, so dumb.
Yeah, pretty implausible. But okay, so right, so the dilemma when they find her is, okay, do we spend time trying to save her life right now, or do we keep going to where we think, you know, the rest of the 100 are to save them? Which my sister referred to as the reverse trolley problem. if you know you can save one person now versus potentially saving a bunch of people in the future.
Which, like, don't know why they didn't just, like, split up, but that's fine.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say, like, okay, yeah, right. Why didn't they split up then? Okay, well, maybe, like, well, we have a much better chance of saving our people if there's a group of us, right? That makes sense. But then at the end of the episode, they do split up, so.
So, yeah, whatever. It's a stalling tactic by the writers. Fine. Yeah. Whatever. We lose another rando. We lose Sterling. He goes over the edge. Right,
Sterling dies.
Oh, well. Yeah, whatever. He had a dumb name anyway.
Didn't have a lot of emotional investment in him. No. But they save the girl, and then they're like, we have to go back because they were also attacked by grounders, but Octavia scared them off. So then Octavia, they reunite. And then they're like, well, Monroe got shot with an arrow and it might have been poisoned, so we got to go back to camp. But Finn, of course, will not rest. He's already murdered a man in the pursuit of finding Clark, and I guess the other people, but mostly Clark. So he's like, well, I'm going to try and save them by myself. So then Murphy is like, well, I'm going to go too because I don't want to go back to camp. They'll lock me up. And Bellamy's like, okay, here's a gun. Watch Finn's back. So it's like the least, like, just two people. And one of them is Murphy, who, again, probably won't do anything for the greater good. Like, are in charge of going to retrieve the rest of the 100, which I'm sure that's going to go great.
Yeah. So. Yikes.
Yikes. So, yes. So then we get to the tragic end of the episode where they reach Camp Jaha. And at this point, Anya is the captain. But Clark is like, unties her. And she's like, I'm letting you go. I want your respect, but I'm not going to kill you. And then she's basically like, your people and my people have to work together to defeat the Mountain Men. And Anya finally kind of seems to accept this, and she says, the commander was my second, so she has a connection to the commander, which might be a plot hole, but we'll figure that out later. And, you know, so, like, you're right, we have to work together, I'll get you an audience with her. And then the guards at Camp Jaha shoot her to death, so much for that! So just basically at the end of these episodes, it's like everything sucks. Although I guess that's how most of the episodes end. Hey friends, quick message from Jenna. So for this part of the episode, Megan accidentally muted her audio for a while. So basically what happened is that we'd finished talking about the TV episodes that we watched, so then we tried to update our death count, which, as Megan had previously predicted, was hard to do since a bunch of people died fighting the grounders, but we don't know how many, and then some people, but not everyone, were taken into Mount Weather. So we determined that our best guess is that there are 54 remaining survivors from the original 100, or technically from the original 103. So then we started talking about the books, and you're just going to hear my voice for like the first couple minutes that we talk about the books, and you'll just kind of have to intuit how Megan was responding to what I said. And sorry about that. Although it's Megan's fault, so she should be the one who's sorry. But anyway, now back to the episode. Okay, so here's my summary for the chapters that we read, which I believe was 16 through 20. We discover that Glass broke up with Luke and was confined because she was pregnant. And in the present day, Luke figures this out and forgives her, and they get back together. Octavia and Wells witness Clark and Bellamy kissing, and Wells gets extremely mad about it. Someone steals the medicine crate that Clark recovered from the woods, and Octavia is the prime suspect. So I just want to say, okay, up until the last thing that we read where Clark and Bellamy kissed, which I still don't like, but before that it was just boring for a while, and I gotta say, the chapters that we read weren't boring this time. There were a lot of things. I don't know that they were good, but they were not boring. So we discover that, like, the secret that Glass has been hiding about why she broke up with Luke and why she was thrown in jail is that she got pregnant. I think you can't... Okay. Again, like, we're reading these books a couple chapters at a time over, like, several months, so, like, I don't remember super well, but they have mentioned that they have population laws, which makes sense. So maybe, like, being pregnant out of wedlock isn't allowed, or being pregnant before you're a certain age isn't allowed. Like, I could see, I mean, again, none of it makes sense, but, like, I could see if it's, like, well, you're still a minor, so you can't, like, take care of this child yet, so you shouldn't have it, so that's illegal. I don't know. So, like, that, again, at least is interesting. And then we also, there's a bunch of stuff that happens with the Glass in these chapters that's interesting. So, like, that happens and Luke figures it out. So then he's like, that's horrible. I'm so sorry you went through that. I can't believe you didn't tell me, but, like, I forgive you. And they, like, make out. And then she comes back home to find her mom. And her mom is like, you're still seeing that boy. You have to stop. Like, it's going to get you in trouble. And you have just been pardoned for your previous crime. So, like, you've got to be on your best behavior. But also, it definitely confirmed that her mom is, like, sleeping with people in high places in order to get stuff. Like,
oh, man, Jenna. Oh, you're going to be so mad at me. I have been muted for an indeterminate amount of time. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know how happened. I really honestly don't know. I don't know how much of this audio is just not there. So it may just be you talking to yourself for a while.
Okay, well, let's finish the episode and then we'll see how much of the episode actually exists. Cool. What else happened? Okay, as you predicted, Clark and Bellamy kissed and it immediately turned into a love triangle.
Because they're the worst and this book is not very good. So of course it would do that.
Yeah.
But also, like, Bellamy and Clark immediately have a falling out where he's like, you're just a Phoenix bitch or something.
Yeah.
Which, like, that argument escalated so quickly and then it, like, tore Clark down so quickly afterward. And it was just so weird. This is not very good.
Yeah. So, right. So, like, Wells saw them kissing. So he's already super mad about that. Then Clark brings the medicine back. She's able to use it to start helping her friend. But, like, her friend needs antibiotics. So obviously that's, like, a long-term thing. She needs to be taking them regularly. And then the only other person in the tent is Octavia, besides Clark and her friend who is sick. And then before Clark falls asleep, and Clark literally thinks, like, I should probably lock up the medicine, but first I'll fall asleep for the night. And before she falls asleep, Octavia's like, hey, what's in that box there? And Clark's like, all the medicine, and then falls asleep. And then the next day, the medicine is, of course, missing. Yeah. And so then Clark is like, Bellamy, where's your sister? I think she took the medicine. And Bellamy is like, freaks out. And is like, screw you, you're just like all those other Phoenix bitches, and Octavia did nothing because she's perfect, and whatever. And then, of course, like, Wells finds out about this and seems to be unduly harsh to Octavia, probably because he's mad at Bellamy for kissing Clark. And Octavia's acting super sketch. Like,
Right? And, like, literally the conversation she had with Wells before that was, like, basically Britney Spears, I'm not that innocent, so.
Yeah, so everyone's suspicious of Octavia, I think for good reason. And, yeah, so that kind of is where we ended. Although, also, in the process of learning about Glass and when she broke up with Luke, we found out that Luke's brother, like, sexually assaulted her. And that wasn't really addressed anymore in the chapters that we read, and I hope that it's not just going to be, like, completely glossed over, because what the fuck?
No, yeah, I don't think I can. I'm predicting right now that that never comes up again.
Right, which, like, you can't just, like, why was that in there? What the hell? You can't just say, like, oh, and then his brother tried to rape me, and, oh my god.
Yeah. Yeah, that happened.
Yeah. Okay, well. Well, I guess that's all I gotta say. It wasn't good,
but it was
more
boring.
Interesting. Yeah. So yeah, that was nice. So, thank you so much for listening to A Bit Much.
We'd like to thank Bremimba and Meredith Stein for our lovely logo.
You can find us on the internet. Our Twitter is @abitmuchpodcast. Our email is abitmuchpodcast@gmail.com. And our blog is abitmuchpodcast.blogspot.com.
And next time, I guess we'll do... Did we plan this out yet or not?
We haven't planned... We'll definitely be watching 4 more episodes.
Okay. And you shouldn't be reading this book anyway, so we'll let you know the chapters next time. And Jenna, do you have a favorite quote from these bunch of episodes that you would like to end with?
I do. First, I'll say that my name is Jenna.
And I'm Megan. And I forgot that part.
And my favorite quote was, Sterling asks, "What do I do?" To which Bellamy replies, "Try not to die."
Good advice.
It is good advice.